Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Ira Michelson and Rod Bryant here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the matrix.
You have joined us here on Beyond the Matrix. I'm Rod Bryant, along with my other co-host, Jerry Gordon. Ira Michelson cannot be here at this moment because he is actually in, I believe, Alabama, right? Right, Jerry? I think you're in Alabama on a tour with the Emunah Project.
That's Robin, correct. Yeah. He's up in Birmingham. He's avoided all of the weather disasters that we've had here on the panhandle and over in Georgia, which have been horrendous.
Right. I mean, like 12, 15 people killed in
18. The total is 18. Up to 18 now. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear that high number in tornadoes nowadays because of the warning system, but I guess maybe it just caught them off guard or something, but it's really tragic, and our prayers are with the citizens that are in that part of the country. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, with the election of Donald Trump, the moving of the embassy, there is a talk back and forth about the strain that it's going to put on the Israel-Palestinian-Sudestinian-Arab, negotiations for peace. But I'm under the impression that there is nothing you could do to make it worse. It's already at its worst.
Not only that, but Trump is going to assign his Jewish son-in-law to be the master of a new deal.
That should be interesting. I wonder if he can do it. I mean, that's the question.
The question is it even worth doing?
Right. I don't know. My problem is, I do believe that Trump says that any brokered deal should be done between the Israelis and the Arabs, not forced on them by any country at all. And I really agree with that 100%.
Well, I think all of us agree with it. The only problem is that somebody doesn't want to negotiate with you, so it's over.
Okay, we're going to have to go to the break. When we get back from the break, we're going to bring a full breakdown and analysis of the embassy move and some of the other things that are going on with the United States and with Russia and some of the things in the Security Council. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this news break.
Dear listeners, join Jason and Jono on our new program entitled Israel on My Mind, a show where we highlight humorous and happy news stories relating to the people and state of Israel. Listen every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, exclusively here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You can join us anytime by listening on demand to Israel News Talk Radio and join in the conversation on our Facebook page. Just search for Israel on My Mind. If you have any questions or comments, then feel free to leave them in the comment section below and maybe you'll be featured on the show.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix with Ira Michelson and Rod Bryant here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us again here on Beyond the Matrix here at Israel News Talk Radio. INTR. I like that. It's nice. Has a nice ring to it.
Sure does.
Yeah. Hey, look, let's jump right into our subject matter. One of the big questions that often gets sort of presented to me and probably to you as well, when someone says, isn't this really going to rattle the cages of the Arabs if they move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? I contend that nothing will make them any more angrier and hateful toward Jews than moving. Nothing can make them any more angry, right? And as a matter of fact, nothing can appease them either. So what is your take on that?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had a discussion with a good friend of mine in Washington, D.C., Shoshana Bryan, who's the poobah at the Republican Jewish Coalition Jewish Policy Center about this. And she's the one who revealed to us that this deal that's in the works is a very slick one, as I call it.
Right.
What it amounts to is moving the U.S. ambassador designee, David Friedman, from Tel Aviv to basically the existing consulate in Jerusalem.
Right.
So that becomes the seat of the ambassador in the capital of Israel, right?
And the bulk of the embassy work and staff will stay in Tel Aviv.
That is correct for a variety of logistical reasons, not the least of which is next door is the famous pit for the IDF, meaning the Israeli military ministry.
Right.
I guess not terribly well known, although many Israelis certainly know it.
Okay, well, this is going to shock you guys. I'm going to tell you because I never heard this before. Go for it.
The existing consulate in Jerusalem basically functions as the local interest section for the roughly 350,000 Arabs in East Jerusalem and, of course, those folks from, guess where, the Palestinian Authority.
So
any Jewish Jerusalemite or any Jews in the disputed territories never go to the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem. They truck all the way down to Tel Aviv to get their visas and other arrangements to go to the United States.
Right.
So this is sort of like a thumb in the eye to the PA, meaning the Palestinian Authority, and others. Now, why should this upset these folks? Well, you know, you hear Mahmoud Abbas saying, well, you know, if you do that, basically we're going
there'll be blood in the streets.
Israel.
There'll be blood in the streets. Well, there's already blood in the streets.
Well, that's correct.
Right.
And then you got King Abdullah II, who said it draws a red line. He should talk. After all, his grandfather was the one who invaded what was going to be the Jewish state and Jerusalem way back in 1948, right?
Right.
So it really brings up a question about why the world is suddenly upset. I mean, even here in my condominium in Pensacola, Florida, a good friend of ours was riding the elevator with me this morning and says, you know, what's all this business about moving the embassy to Jerusalem?
Yeah, why do and it I now? Said, why create a stress point?
Correct. Well, you know, the reality is that as a friend of mine who's a retired Hebrew University professor, Mordechai Neeson has written about, in fact, he was interviewed about a week or so ago, wrote a book back in 2011 saying, Israel west of the river. Now, get that significance.
No, repeat it. Your mic cut out for just a second. Just repeat that statement.
Israel west of the river.
Right.
That means that basically Israel owns all that land. Now, the reason I raise that is that in the recent past, well before the run-up of the UN, infamous UN Security Council Resolution 2334 and the Paris Peace Conferences, which seemed to have fallen apart, and even the phony session before the UN Security Council, I guess about a week ago, there was a French court case brought by the Palestinian Authority against two French companies that won the tender to build the light rail system that snakes throughout all of Jerusalem, basically. And the Palestinian Authority brought a whole bunch of charges and things of that sort. And the courts, after listening to it, looking at international law, said, get off it.
Right.
Firstly, you have no standing. You weren't a signatory to the tender to build the rail line. Secondarily, under international law, Israel owns all of the land west
of the river.
In a nutshell. And what was interesting about it was this was the first international case since the founding of the State of Israel.
Do you remember the year that this was?
This case was in 2016.
Wow.
It's pretty recent.
Yeah.
So it's the first international case that proves Israel's legal rights to the land.
Hmm.
And that raises a whole host of questions about If that's the case, then what are we arguing about for?
Right.
I mean, you've got Donald Trump saying he's going to send his son-in-law, a nice Jewish kid, in to basically cut a deal, you know, broker a deal with the Palestinians and the Israelis. And here we have Mahmoud Abbas on the one hand saying there'll be blood on the streets.
Right.
And then you have the little king, Abdullah II, saying it will cross a red line, and he should talk. After all, it was his grandfather who unleashed an illegal occupation of Jewish-owned lands.
That's right.
So it's interesting. In fact, you know, when I discussed this with a group, you won't believe this, at a Federation discussion group last Tuesday here in Pensacola, they were shocked. That this occurred.
So they didn't know. They didn't know about this court ruling.
They didn't know about the court ruling.
Interesting.
They didn't know about the other legal precedents, and those go back basically to the UN Security Council resolutions adopted after the June 6 days of war in 1967. And those pretty much said, you know, listen, guys, this is not about a two-state solution. It's about giving Israel just and defensible borders.
Right.
So, you know, here we have a stunning non-U.S. international finding in favor of Israel in a French court.
Right.
Saying this is the law.
Right. Yeah.
Add to that Hashem's covenant, and what do you got?
Well, I'm hoping that we're actually turning the corner on some resolution to this. We all know that the only way that real peace is going to come is when the Jewish people themselves recognize and admit the land is theirs, because there are a lot of what I call mediocre Jewish people who do not consider that their land. It's like,
that's unfortunately the sort of myopia that has arisen amongst liberal Jewish circles that, my God, you know, we're occupying Arab lands. That's not the case.
The poor Arabs just need a place to stay.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. So in your research, just in a second, let me just repeat what you said to get people to understand what's going on. The consulate, the U.S.-American consulate in Jerusalem, is going to be the new seat of the ambassador, or at least assistant ambassador. Is he going to go there, or the actual ambassador?
Well, if the ambassador goes there, so does the chargé,
means
number two in command of the embassy.
So you speak French now, chargé. So, so he will move there. But what is interesting to find out is the sort of the seat of the Palestinian Authority. And its offices out of the U.S. consulate.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Well, basically, you know, every time we put an embassy in a location, whether it's Tajikistan or whatever, they hire local people in what is called the local interest sections. And in this case, all of the local people in the existing consulate in Jerusalem.
All from the Palestinian Authority. How convenient. No one from the Jewish community from East Jerusalem lives there. I mean, works there, I guess.
I think that's a correct fact.
Unfortunately. Yeah, that is really an odd situation. Well, with all of the uproar that has been going on in this past weekend with the protest against Donald Trump, I would like you and I to sort of provide a little bit of commentary on that and some other issues that have come up in the news that I would like to address. But we're getting ready to go to a break. I really appreciate you guys listening to Beyond the Matrix. If you ever have any questions, anything that you want to present to us, you can send us an email at ira@IsraelNewsTalkRadio, or you can send it to Rod@IsraelNewsTalkRadio. We'd love to be able to hear from you. If you have any questions or subject matter that you would like us to expound on, we're pretty eclectic. We talk everything from religion to politics to you name it. As a matter of fact, all the subject matter that Your mother told you not to talk about around the kitchen table. That's what we do. So make sure you're not eating when you listen to us. We'll be right back after these messages. I have Jerry Gordon with me. And, of course, me, Rod Bryant. And Ira's on a little reprieve. He's not on a vacation. He's working really hard. And we'll hear from him next week sometime. We'll be right back.
There was a time you didn't worry about terrorism. It was something that happened in a faraway place or to someone else. But now you want to know. Now you want to understand. Now you're afraid that you might be in the danger zone. You need to listen to Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone every week, where you will find out the truth about what is going on in the world around you. Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone, right here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix with Ira Michelson and Rod Bryant here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Another segment here for you to listen to here on Beyond the Matrix. And I'm Rod Bryant along with Jerry Gordon. We're so missing Ira Michelson in the mix of the conversation, but he is in Alabama in the United States, touring with Rob Dror, Kasudo, having a great time sharing faith with the Jewish community. And also the B'nai Noach community around Texas, et cetera. You know, Jerry, before we went to the break, we had just, you know, talked about, for the whole last segment, actually, about the embassy being moved and some of the other stressors that are in Israel at this time. And there's a little, pretty much unknown person to most people on the outside of Israel. And I would venture to say maybe on the inside some people don't even know. But he calls himself Sheikh Raid, and he's got a full name that's bigger than my arm, and I'll let you pronounce it. Tell us about this international man of mystery.
Well, it's not so much a mystery as much as he is the Israeli equivalent of head of ISIS or the Islamic State. His name is Sheikh Raad Salah. He's an Israeli Arab Muslim Salafist, and you know what that means. That means he believes essentially in to follow in the way of Muhammad and his companions, one of whom was Abu Bakr. Mm-hmm. So he has been in and out of Israeli jails for years. At one point, he was deported to England. Brits didn't want him back, so they sent him back. Meanwhile, Israel has debated what to do with him, and including banning what is used to be called the northern branch of the Islamic movement. It's in Israel, it's shortened to be the Islamic movement. We used to refer to it as Hamas inside Israel.
Right, right.
This is a guy who basically accuses Israel of Judaizing essentially the Haram, meaning our Temple Mount.
Right.
And he wants to essentially to destroy the state of Israel and establish a global caliphate there. What does that sound like?
Well, listen, he doesn't deny the fact that Jerusalem is and used to be the capital, in his mind, used to be the capital of Israel. Does he deny the occupation or the, Temple Mount as being part of Israel? No? Yes?
No, but basically he wants to supplant the state of Israel.
Right, right. Because he feels that they're trying to Judaize
what we call the Temple Mount.
Right.
All right, so basically this is a guy who is serving another nine-month term in an Israeli jail. He gets sprung last Thursday, the 19th. Mm-hmm. Now, during the week, there was a horrendous event, another car-ramming attack down in the Negev in a Bedouin village. And the police were there because the police had orders to destroy illegal housing. I'll get to that in a second. So what does he do? He basically causes another series of protests to arise on Shabbat in Israel.
Which a police officer ends up getting killed in the process, correct?
Right. In an Arab community in central Israel, loaded with his fellow Salafist believers. Mm-hmm. And among them, in this crowd of 5,000, are a bunch of myopic Jews supporting him because they feel that, you know, it's not right for the state of Israel to come in and destroy illegal, unpermitted housing or construction. Now, the reason I raise that is the problem in the disputed territories, including in places like Area C.
Right.
Where the Palestinians have moved in, they don't get permission to build from the military authorities in the disputed territories. They simply go ahead and do it.
Right.
So basically, that is something that good friends of mine in Israel have said has been a plague inside Israel for years, mm-hmm. and finally came to a head with this little activity in the Negev last week. So basically, Sheikh comes out of jail, incites more riots and protests. And today, what's happening in Israel is his followers are engaged in slow-mo convoys
blocking the major
north-south highways in Israel.
Right.
So, you know, why isn't the Interior Ministry or the Public Security Ministry doing anything about that and or him?
Well, unfortunately, don't you think that
outraged?
The Israeli government oftentimes is they're sort of hemmed up by a very progressive liberal side of Israeli society that threatens all kinds of mayhem if anything is done like that. And, you know, it's part of being a modern democracy. Maybe that's the negative side of a democracy, right, or a republic, that you have to appease those people that are in your country that are on both sides of a divide philosophically or ideologically.
Yeah. I mean, it's not unlike, for example, the protests that occurred this weekend and Sunday and all over the United States and elsewhere. And certainly there were grievances there expressed by everybody.
But the problem, my problem is most people that would be on interview, Jerry, they were complaining about stuff that Trump will do, not what he's done, what he's going to do. Like, and then when you hear what they say he's going to do, I'm thinking, wow, never heard him say he was going to do that. You know,
that's correct. So it's the question of free expression and the justice system in Israel, which bends over backwards to permit that to occur. But why it permits somebody as seditious as Sheikh Salah, or for that matter, you know, look at the situation with the member of the Knesset, Gattis, who patently is seditious and under any man's law would be clapped in jail.
Right.
But for the courts who say you can't do that because, you know, he's a sitting member of the parliament. So Israel's got some of those things to address as a, quote, democracy.
Right.
Not a republic, a democracy.
A democracy. No, absolutely. No. Yeah. What sets us apart is we're a democratic republic. So it's, I don't know if people realize that that's a big difference between a democracy and a democratic republic. That is why we have so many people in the street protesting, saying that he's not their president.
That is correct.
You know, because they don't realize that we're in a democratic republic. What do you think about Trump and Netanyahu's, what he has, Netanyahu says it was a very warm conversation.
Well, look, they had conversation. Don't forget that Netanyahu met him in his gold leaf palace at the Trump Tower this past summer.
Like going to meet in Dubai, right?
That's correct.
Right.
So, you know, they know each other. They get along. Netanyahu knows David Friedman, obviously, who was the co-author of the famous Trump campaign statement about the embassy and more.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's expectations that this will be a different sort of U.S. administration in terms of not distancing itself from its ally in the Middle East. So we're going to see whether or not that's realized in any great degree when Bibi comes into town in February, mm-hmm. I gather, for a palaver with Trump and maybe Trump's son-in-law and a few others, you know, in the Oval Office. And hopefully it will be a lot less frosty than was the case whenever Bibi showed up to meet
exactly.
President Obama.
Well, even though we know that there really wasn't any planning or strategic discussions going on, it does pose a good, bright future in the sense that our relationship will become a more cogent relationship, one that is clear and concise about policy between the United States and Israel and how we'll stand with them. Now, you know, we all know who actually works these deals. It's usually all the guys in the back room who never get mentioned, right? It's the guys that are hammering this stuff out. And, you know, God willing, he's going to have the right kind of people that are working in his administration that's going to lead him right. One of the big differences between President Trump, that's still hard to say after so many years of saying President Obama, and our former president, Obama, is that Obama was absolutely driven by ideology. So was all of his staff. So many times, logic eluded them. And it's I just found it just unbelievable, some of the decisions that were made that just seemed to be like off the wall. And you realize, oh, no, that makes sense when you realize how ideological they are about these positions.
Well, you're right. Under Obama, he had satellited around him a bunch of people who were fundamentally anti-Israel and also had gone on record in support of the, quote, Palestinian interests. There's a famous story I like to tell about Obama when he was leaving Chicago, I guess, in 2005. He had been palsy-walsy with the producers of a blog website called the Electronic Intifada. Are you familiar with
it? Oh, yeah. Very familiar with it.
Yeah. Well, Ali Abunima was his big buddy in Chicagoland when Obama thought the world of the annual Arab anti-discrimination dinners including one back in 1998 with none other than Edward Said from Colombia. And one of the legends out of that relationship, it was before he departed for D.C., Abunima turned to him and said, "Are you going to forget about us with all this Jewish money, you know, propelling your campaign in Chicago?"
Right.
And he said, "Don't worry about it.
Right.
I will keep my promise." And you know something?
Yeah, he did.
He did.
"Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it." Hey, we'll be right back after these messages. We'll pick it back up and continue this discussion. You are listening to us here on Israel News Talk Radio, Beyond the Matrix.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. Please consider supporting our advertisers who help keep us on the air so you can listen for free. Thank you.
I used to get up all the time at night to go to the bathroom and have to take numerous breaks at work as well. But not anymore. I found what some people claim is a miracle cure from Israel. It's made from the cactus flower called opuntuma. It's an all-natural and herbal remedy that helps with urinary problems, and it's really helped me. No more embarrassing trips to the bathroom. Get it at priso.com. That's P-R-I-S-S-O.com.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix with Ira Michelson and Rod Bryant here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are back in the final segment of Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. We have just about run the whole gamut, but we're actually going to pierce down a different alley where a big arrow is pointing us to. And the question is, or let me just pose this. Why does the United States not have a comprehensive anti-ballistic missile system? We don't have an air defense system that can combat the intercontinental missiles that are out there. Does people realize that? No. And now I have Jerry Gordon. We're going to be talking about the Arrow 2, Israel's Star Wars machine, right? It's kind of over-exaggerated, but you know.
Well, actually, it's the Arrow 3 Wars machine.
Yes, Arrow 3.
But basically, you know, it goes back 6 years ago when the Israel Air Defense umbrella was sketched out. You know, we know about the Iron Dome system, right? We know about David Sling.
Right.
And the Arrow 2. But then this past week, something was very interesting. Israel finally perfected its Star Wars defense against incoming ICBMs with the deployment, not the test, the deployment of the Arrow 3 anti-ballistic missile that was co-developed with Boeing, and is able to shoot down future Iranian ICBMs.
Or North
Korean.
And
for that matter, I asked a question in a post, which everybody responded positively to. Gee, if the Israelis can do this, why can't we do this? Because we don't have an effective missile defense anywhere in the United States worth a tinker's dam, and we spent $38 billion doing it.
Now, mind you, we have a fairly good air defense system against standard aircraft. But that's it. I mean, the Patriot system, which has been around since the Gulf War, has went from one grade up to another grade. And, you know, it's been a good system, but it's nowhere effective for what we would need for intercontinental missiles because of the altitude that they fly.
Correct. And as that roly-poly guy in Pyongyang, you know, Kim Jong-un, gets closer and closer to perfecting essentially a nuclear warhead on top of one of his favorite toys. Or, as a friend of mine, former CIA director, Ambassador Jim Woolsey, once opined, he can take his existing space satellite launcher and essentially put up a nuke in a satellite and cause mayhem on our electric grid here.
Right. Now, they never signed any nuclear treaty.
No.
Because we
have not,
you know,
not signed.
According to the treaty we have between us and Russia and other countries that have signed, is there are to be no nuclear weapons deployed in space.
Correct. So these folks can do that. And right now there's a satellite circling over you in Houston, occasionally me in Pensacola, that was put up last February. Everybody forgets that. But if that had a crude nuclear device in it, it could cause, could generate an electronic magnetic pulse effect.
Right. EMP.
Right. So we don't have in the United States high-altitude, exo-atmospheric defenses against that kind of stuff.
Right.
Last spring, I attended a naval aviation symposium and posed a question to the outgoing head of NORAD. Everybody knows what NORAD is. It's in Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado, right?
Right.
And every Christmas, we see NORAD sending out messages about where Santa is coming from, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I posed a question to him.
That's a good use for a $13 billion facility.
That's correct. I posed a question to outgoing NORAD commander, Navy Admiral Bill Gortney, and he immediately turned to an audience of 2,000 and said, this guy was not a paid plant. He is absolutely correct about the nature of why we should be concerned about the North Korean and, by definition, the Iranian ICBM threat, because guess what North Korea is developing?
Right.
Iranian ICBM. So, hearkening back to what we were talking about earlier, having something like deployment of the Arrow 3 here in the continental United States, whether it's Vandenberg Air Force Base or locations on the East Coast, seems to make credible sense because it exists and it can knock these things down.
Yeah, there. I'm actually doing a little, while you're talking, I'm doing a little homework here to see if they were actually at one time, I want to make sure I didn't misspeak, the thermal high altitude air defense system, they were trying to work on it with the Patriot PAC-2 and now PAC-3.
Correct.
Okay, but I don't know if it was really ever as successful as something that Israel's built on this level. I mean, I'm looking around, but the number of missiles, a Thaad missile system intended on intercepting short and medium range. You see, you know, talk about something that's launched from Korea that goes into, you know, low orbit space. There's, you know, nothing at this point, I would guess.
Right, except that the RO3 could potentially knock that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, it's extremely mobile, which means it could be deployed just about anywhere in the world.
Correct.
And if I'm not mistaken, it probably could be deployed on ship.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you want to get informed about something you didn't know you needed to know, listen to Beyond the Matrix. No, I mean, listen, the thing is when I was in the Army, I was a former air defender, right? So Patriot and Hawk missile systems, which they don't have any Hawk anymore. But these were pretty amazing systems way back in the day, right? But I'm not sure that they've really done much major upgrades besides the latest one that took place about 10 years ago.
Well, that's correct. And last year, it was a General Accountability Office in Washington, D.C. to put a report saying those mid-course interceptors based up at Fort Wainwright in Alaska and down at Vandenberg are next to useless. They can't knock these things out of the atmosphere.
No. You know, it's amazing how we've gone from a posture that was pretty much ready for this. But we have not done any major upgrades. Most of our upgrades has been to standard combat forces and equipment on the ground for combat, which is good. You know, I'm happy for that because I have sons in the U.S. military. But for the nation itself, it would be nice to know that we had a system that we could deploy and even maybe put it in a hardened sight to be able to respond to something like this.
Well, that's why I raised the point in a post I did this past week saying, you know, if Israel can do that in cooperation with the United States, because those Arrow 3s were tested way out in something called White Sands Proving Ground at one point in time.
Just about all of Israel's major systems have been built here.
That's correct.
By Raytheon and by Boeing, et cetera.
Yep. Although the technology we're talking about was developed in Israel. Proper.
No, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the big military contracts that work. They do amazing job. I'm hoping that the system could be developed well enough that the United States decides to build its own system.
Well, think of it as payback to all those people who naysay all of the military grants in support of Israel, saying, here's a case in point where you could take this thing off the shelf and protect the United States.
Right, right. It's a good reason to back up the, what do they call, the development and research program.
Correct.
You know, I mean, it's this is, we live in the technology today is moving at such a high rate of speed. I am sure it's pretty difficult to even keep on top of it with these guys. But I do know for sure that a combination of Israel and the engineering we have in the United States, there's nothing can stop them from developing some of the most amazing defense systems.
The real question is having the will and the money to do it.
Right. Look, one of the biggest things as an amateur historian, one of the things that you and I both know is the prime example of the reluctance to move was France and England when Germans invaded Poland. It was that small delay that, you know, I don't know, 18-month window that these countries combined could have had a very significant response against the Germans, and they didn't do it. It was that pause, the timidity is what I call, to make the move. And I'm hoping as a country that we're no longer going to be a timid country. Now, there are a lot of people that would like that. They like the timidity. You know, they like the, you know, let's back off and let everybody be happy with us. But if we're going to have a safe country, it has to be a protected country. We've come up on the end of the show. Jerry, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're jet setting all over the world and seeing prime ministers and kings while I'm still in my humble place in Texas. But it's good having you on the show. We'll chat with you guys next week, so please come back at the same time. You have been listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Jew haters, beware. Political hitman is here. Who's in my crosshairs? Who's in my hot seat? I'm Howie Silberger. Join me Sundays at noon Eastern, 7 Israeli, and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 9 Israeli, for Political Hitman, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.